Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker coming to you on recording. Am I real? Am I a person? Am I a machine? Who could say? No one knows.
What's sad, internet? More like it.
That's what's good, internet. Nothing. Nothing is good. Everyone is sad. Everyone is crying.
Don't be a human. Don't be a robot.
What's existentially galling, internet?
Everything. Everything about Nier Automata. Yeah. I almost did it.
Just embrace it. This is like the Lara Croft thing. Just so at some point, it gets embedded in your head that you're going to say it the wrong way. Yes. And so, look, we'll just say up top. We're realize there's a better way to say it. I'm probably going to end up saying
Automata.
Automata. I don't care. Yeah.
Hey, huge fucking spoiler for Nier Automata. At the end, one of those helper bots just straight up says, "Thank you for playing Nier Automata," and they say Automata. So that
Do
is
they?
Canon.
I didn't even notice.
Yes.
Good. Yes. Justice. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me, as you can hear already, Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And Giant Bomb's own Alex Navarro.
Hey, everyone.
Well, this is sort of like all Giant Bomb's own in a way.
Yes, in a sense. In a sense, this is a family reunion. The lost sons of Giant Bomb, the sad robots.
Well, wait, no, I wasn't lost. I'm still there. Like, they didn't lose me.
Oh, I just mean that, like, based on my time there, even when it was just you and me, we were the sad robot children of Giant Bomb.
Oh, for sure, yes. No, I mean, yes. I will forever be the sad robot child of that website and the world.
And the world.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about Nier Automata. We're going to talk probably a little bit about the original Nier when it's relevant. And so this is your big warning up top that we're going to go deep into spoiler territory without any specifics, like warnings going forward.
And like other movies, other TV shows, like
if you haven't
seen Citizen Kane, like we're going to talk about that. It's fine.
We might spoil the Nier stage drama at some point. That's a thing that exists. And so just heads up on that way. And if you haven't played this game and are still curious and listening, all right, stick it out. It's going to sound weird. We're going to say a bunch of nonsense that doesn't mean anything. So good luck with that.
That's my kind of
Patrick,
nonsense.
You were the one who came to me, Patrick, who said, like, Austin, stop everything you're doing. I know you love Zelda.
Yes.
I know that you
I love Zelda.
Right, totally. And you said, I know that you have some weird obligation to finish Mass Effect for some stupid reason.
Yes,
you should be playing.
I read articles about it. I still haven't worked that part out, but I accepted it as a fact.
It was bad. It was a waste of my time this year. But then you were like, oh, you have to play Nier Automata. Alex, you were in a similar boat. Where do we even start with this thing?
I guess we should start with the first, like, before we get to the new one, like, does anyone have a relationship with the original Nier other than remembering Justin McElroy getting dragged by the internet for quitting a review because he didn't like the fishing minigame? Like, that's like my one touchstone for Nier over the course of, like, the better part of 8 years.
This is literally my first Yoko Taro game, so I barely even have that McElroy-flavored cultural touchstone for it.
A decade ago in the game room of Hofstra University, my friend Sean was like, you have to see this weird ending of Drakengard. There's a weird lady in Tokyo. And I saw, and I was like, that's some shit right there. At some point in the future, I'm going to get around to that or something that has to do with that. And here we are. I also watched Polygon's Phil Kohler play a little bit of the first Nier for Stream Friends back in the day, and he eventually stopped playing it. But as I'd seen that stuff, and I have lots of friends who are deep into Nier culture. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I remember around the time when I was at Giant Bomb and I started playing, like, the, you know, Danganronpa and, like, these other visual 999 and VLR, and, like, I was, like, specifically going down this rabbit hole of playing a bunch of sort of like Japanese games that were like sort of off the beaten path that like were not, I guess, off the beaten path for like my own personal play style. And so when I was asking for recommendations, like the game that would come up over and over again was Nier, which is like, hey, if you find this stuff interesting, you know, if you like the weird trippy storytelling in the like the 999 games, like Nier is probably up your alley. But I always got put off by the concept of playing it because, and this is like long before I had like the time commitments of a child, but was just like, hey, you gotta saying you have to beat a game like five times is like the quickest way to like put me to sleep on ever having any interest in playing the game, because it usually strikes me as a game that is just trying to waste my time, as opposed to what like I learned with the, you know, the new game that actually, I mean, I don't know if it's as true in the original, but, you know, I never felt like, you know, Automata was wasting my time in the way it doled out its endings. It was just, that's most games end up doing that to give you, you know, an epilogue at the end that's 30 seconds long that, you know, teases a sequel.
Yeah, like in this case, this is, you know, the way it was described to me as I first sort of delved into it was each playthrough is more like a separate chapter or, you know, a book within the larger volume. And that, you know, the last two endings aren't even actually things that you really have to replay very much of at all. The actual amount of, like, replayed content from the first section on is, like, I would say maybe half of the second playthrough, and that's it.
And even that stuff is often flavored a little differently. Even if it's just, oh, I know what the name of this boss is now, or I get a different, like, weird fairy tale puppet show before or after to add some extra context around that enemy. Like, that stuff all made it feel fresh for that second time through. I did go into the third route feeling like, okay, I don't think I can do this again. And then, like, immediately, it, like, no, this is completely different.
This is a totally different deal.
And so for me, that totally paid off. And I was, I almost wish that we would go back in time and say, like, stop using the term playthrough for this, like, or something, because it just doesn't feel that way in actuality. It really does just, it does just feel like a more complete game. You know, I guess the one knock against it here is that I could imagine a world in which there was Route 1 and then Route 2, and Route 1 does the thing that the A29S route does, where you're bopping between the two of them to tell a complete story.
Right.
Instead. And, like, yeah, maybe that would be a more manageable game in this year that happens to have incredibly, really incredibly busy first quarter. But in a world in which I hadn't spent so much time in all these other games, I would be really happy that this game had so much replayability, so to speak, or such a long leg on it.
Well, and the way it, like, doles out storytelling in the, you know, I think chapters is, like, the better way. Like, yes, you have to beat the game, but I think when you use the term beat the game, that's what threw me off on it. It was, like, the terminology, which was both accurate, but also, like, wildly misleading about what's actually happening upon, like, replaying. It's not even replaying the game again. You're just playing chapter two that happens to take you through some content. Like, it's a tough thing to describe, especially if you don't want to spoil sort of like what makes it special. Like, part of the, you know, I'm thankful that I took the risk, because when I started the second playthrough and you know, you're going on, you know, into the industrial area again, and you're like, oh yeah, that robot was real cool with the chainsaw the first time, I guess, but, like, man, I don't want to do that a second time. But then you realize you've shifted perspectives, like, all of a sudden you're really excited to see what's happening. Once you realize you have, like, the access to the hacking mechanic, which very quickly wears out its welcome as, like, an actual mechanic, but, you know, opens up all sorts of storytelling, like when you get to that first major boss in the amusement park, you realize, like, this wasn't just, you know, a creature gone mad, but, like, they was a creature that had gone mad, but the reason it went mad is, like, it was driven mad because it had no context for what it meant to be alive, and so it looked for humans for comfort and ended up eating robots!
Three things, and I'll get to the third one last because that's a longer conversation. Two things. One, that robot's name, did you notice who the robot was talking to? Who was the one who, like, wouldn't give it attention?
I thought it was the asshole philosopher man, right? Yes, it's Jean-Paul.
Jean-Paul, go fuck yourself.
So two, here's my, like, bullshit philosophy degree paying off. Her name is Simone. His name is Jean-Paul. Jean-Paul Sartre spent 30 years in a relationship with Simone de Beauvoir, whose last name I can never say, who was like this prototypical feminist, like critical theorist. And their relationship is like storied and fucked up and weird and interesting and great, but also like weird. And like that was just one of those moments where I was like, I see you, Yoko Taro. Yep. I see you fucking going to the library. The second thing I wanted to say about that, or about, you know, you said when this game gets special, or you can kind of almost see it getting special as soon as you get into that second playthrough. Did you guys spill the bucket? Because you start that game, you start that second playthrough, and you're not even 9S yet. You're a little machine. You're one of the little, like, tinker toy robots.
That's
and
right.
Your brother is sick or dead, and you're like, I have to go get oil for my brother. And you go to pick up a bucket.
Oh, God, yes. I completely forgot yes. about that.
And so happened then, like, so long ago, yeah.
It happened so long ago, I know, but it's like it's one of the first moments when you're like, oh, shit, like, this game is doing shit. This game is really going to go and do a different thing here. Obviously, it had already started to, I guess the word is humanize. It had started to make you feel for the machines, even in your first playthrough. But in playthrough two, literally the first thing you're doing is trying to revive a dead machine as the machine's brother. And then 9S, like, making fun of it. Because, like, no, idiot, you can't fix a dead machine. Yeah, fucking good luck, 9S.
Yeah, you kind of get the... Well, I mean, you know, the context there, obviously, is that the androids by this stage still have no real conception or understanding right. of the idea that the machines could evolve beyond, like, the sort of what they determined to be randomized programming of the larger network they're a part of. So at that moment, he's just looking at it, it's like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. This machine is just broken, doesn't know what the fuck it's doing.
And it's saying brother over and over again. It must have heard that from somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
That, to me, ended up being, like, one of my favorite things about this game. One of the things that did make it special was that it... I mean, there are, like, 12 different things that are alive in this game, none of which are human, right?
Right.
Like, even if you just count the main players of... your high unit androids, or version androids, regular androids, of mm-hmm. which there is a distinction that you get late in the game... machines who are connected to the network, machines that aren't connected to the network, the big AI boss at the end of the game.
That's even like that part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've sort of blacked out on that part.
But I like all of it from the AI thing before it splits into a billion things, mm-hmm. the AI thing after. And the thing that makes this game great for me is none of them are just conceptualized as being the same as human, but all of them are given the attention that human characters in stories about robots are given. If that makes sense? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Like the thing about them is that you know, the androids, despite being the most humanized of all of them, aren't right. even necessarily trying to be human. They just happen to be more programmed that way, and their only real interest in humanity is protecting it. Like, they're not trying mm-hmm. to emulate or be like humans. I mean, they have like sort of emotional responses, but like they seem far less interested in it than a lot of those sort of rogue sect robot societies that are all sort of like studying and trying to understand and grasp concepts of humanity, sometimes to hilarious effect, often to deeply tragic and horrifying effect.
Almost always. Yeah. Just about almost always. Even when it's good, right? Like even Pascal's Village, which is like for me the emotional linchpin of this game,
yes.
is like you were the chosen one, Pascal. Like, you were the one who figured it out. You were the one
who... enlightened robot that was going to lead all of them, like some sort of yes. religious figure. Like, there was a version when I first encountered Pascal that, which, like, you know, as an aside, it's also interesting how the game, like, does weird shit with gender yes. with Pascal. You know, you can easily imagine Pascal becoming some sort of a religious figure that, like, leads a movement, and then, like there's a version of that game where, like, you could have seen that written, but, like, that's the way less interesting version, because that's the version you could imagine, as right. opposed to the version that plays out, which, I've written about the game, you know, the version I saw was, you know, when Pascal decides to rebel against the decision that they've made to not engage in combat, to defend the children of their village, and then goes in, you know, finds that they've committed suicide because they were given, you know, like, fear and empathy, and then decided that was too much and decided to kill themselves. And then you're given the option to either, delete Pascal's memories or leave. And when I tried to leave... The game comes up with a prompt where it says Pascal has some dialogue that says, please come back, like, we need to,
oh,
you need
man.
To, you know, come delete my memories. And so I interpreted that as the game saying, like a lot of games do, that, hey, this is gated. You need to, like, hey, come make the hard decision. Got to delete those memories. And so I deleted Pascal's memories because I interpreted that as a gating of the game, which I then later found out you can just leave and
leave
Pascal with Willow's, which was the preferable option. I thought if Pascal was going to go on this emotional arc, like while it was difficult, like the preferable route was for Pascal to engage with those memories and try and live on from there. But then I guess if you wipe Pascal's memories and then go back into the village, you then find Pascal selling the parts of the children that had committed suicide in that room. And I didn't discover any of this, but I wish I hadn't read it because I was at least semi-okay with how I had left things.
Do you know what happens, like, if you actually walk out of the room?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so I ended up deleting the memories because I didn't think that there was a third option in the moment. And I just didn't consider it. And by the way, fuck you for jumping right into this one, by the way, because this is the fucking, this is the moment in this game where I actually had to get up and walk around the block a few times because
I was
not infuriated at the game, but just infuriated at the things I was being forced to feel as a result. It's not just that you have to delete the memories. You go into the hacking minigame, and each memory comes with a fucking audio clip of his happy moments with these children in the whole, you know, sort of his relationship with them. And, you know, as you kill each one, you're essentially just killing this happy fucking, you know, I love you, I'm gonna always protect you thing. And it's just, it's the just an absolute dagger to the heart.
Mm-hmm. It's bad. It's really rough. And for me, the other thing was, it happened... So I'd been playing this game for hours and hours and hours, and it was like a night, and I'd already put 6 or 7 hours into the game, and I got to a bit that was, I was doing side quests as A2, and a bunch of them came out of Pascal's Village, and so it was like, go get iron or whatever to build these kids some toys, and I did that, and literally the last scene I did was building the kids a slide that adds a real slide into Pascal's Village that you can literally slide down, and there's just this moment of almost domestic bliss where it was just like, this is, they don't let you build toys for children unless they're about to fucking snatch that away from you.
Well, see, I had to live with the fact that I never got to do that, like, because there's an event that triggers what happens. Like, there's a moment where you can get the side quest to go get those items, and then I went to go do something else, which I didn't think was, you know,
there's the thing with Pascal is they're like, oh, can you go get these books for me? I'm reading about philosophy. Can you pick up these books? And the second you touch one of those books, you get the call that's like, oh no, everything's bad. And
the zombie robots have showed up.
Oh man. Oh, what a miserable moment. And that's not to say the rest of it isn't miserable too, right? Like,
but it's just miserable in very different ways.
Yeah, and it's also the character that is like the most, if there are like three main characters in the game, like, Pascal is the third main character, even if it's not one that is playable. Like, it is the one
sense.
And it's the one of the not main characters that is sort of fleshed out to the degree that, I don't know, like, it always made me happy to go to that village because that music was so good. And then occasionally you would run off to the right so you can maybe hear a little bit of that amusement park music.
Yeah, which is also great. All the music in this game is dope. Yeah. It's, like, so good. Well, the other thing there that's interesting is Pascal's Village always felt safe. Like, you never fought people there up until that point in the game. And Pascal was a pacifist, and they were all pacifists. Whereas at least, like, in the resistance zone, like, oh, yeah, there's a big boss nearby. Or there's, you know, you go to the amusement park and everyone's chill, but then you fight a bunch of enemies, you know, further into that level. And so the first bit of tragedy with Pascal was like, please don't make me play as Pascal and make me hurt people. Please don't make me, like, be the thing that swings the fist. Like, I don't ever want... Pascal's too pure to be a player character. Let me be these...
Not only do they make you swing the fist, they make you swing literally the biggest fist in the game.
Yes.
I love Pascal as sort of like a pacifist character that is very much just trying to find a way to let his enclave of robots survive without having to get involved in the conflict directly. I would be lying if I didn't say a little like triumphant yelp didn't escape my mouth. The second Pascal comes swooping in, jumps on that angles bot, and just fucking like just starts rodeo riding that thing straight into that fucking wave of tanks that is like coming straight at you.
It's dope. Like don't get me wrong. It's like it's a power up moment. It's the most anime bullshit. I love it. But it was also this thing of like, I wish you didn't have to do this. Like I'm so sorry you got pushed to this, because part of the thing that made his village so cool was they had seemed to be so one of the key conflicts in this game is like, where do you go for order in your life? Do you go to religion? Do you go to sex and to like that sort of like sexuality and socialization around attraction? Do you go to military authority? Do you go to some sort of like hierarchy where you think you have a king? And Pascal's village was like, like none of that feels right to us. Like, I think we want to just build a community together. And one of the things that's great about the game is like, even the Yorha units don't ever have that existential threat until the end of the game, because they have such a formal, clear sense of duty and structure. And then to have the one place where it seemed open, where they could change what they wanted to be, have that shut down is just like so devastating for me.
Well, and they also seem to be like, you know, the one sort of like sect of the various groups and how they interpreted sort of like what was left behind on the planet Earth, that they, while humanistic in some forms, because whether by virtue of that's just how they have to be presented in the game, they didn't seem to necessarily follow or look for the remnants of humanity as the path forward. Although they took on human traits through like virtue of programming and sort of natural evolution from that base programming, like they didn't seem to like, you know, like Simone, where like Simone looked like traditional sort of values of beauty and love and sex as like her way of finding happiness or finding attraction. It's like Pascal seemed to imbue the community with a sense of like, we'll figure it out in the way that works for us, as opposed to let's look to essentially what are the gods of planet Earth, which is like the remnants of humanity, like in a both like literal sense for like the Yorha units, and then like in sort of like figurative sense for like the sort of archaeological work that a lot of the other groups on Earth end up doing, because that's what's around them. Like Pascal and his group just sort of said, we'll take what we can, but we're not going to be, you know, slavish to what they've left behind as like that being the path forward.
And the interesting thing though is that like, because Pascal's group is sort of the only one that is sort of like a true neutral in the grand scheme of things, they're also the only ones, like you said, that don't necessarily go down that path of like trying to find some system that existed in human history that would apply to them directly. Mm. And a lot of those different parts, like the, you know, the Forest Kingdom with their weird king that they eventually put into a baby and then don't understand why it doesn't grow.
God, it's so good.
Or
it's
the
so
fucking the religious cult that takes over the factory that, you know, sort of eventually just turns into a straight up death cult. Like all of those different segments are, you know, I think fairly broad but understandable criticisms of like those kinds of systems and the ways that they can go wrong, especially when applied in hands that don't fully understand them. Whereas with Pascal's village, the only real criticism there is that like it's cool that you want to do that. Right. But you can't do that without conflict, because
you live in the world. You don't get to retreat to the mountain and be a pacifist monk who doesn't engage with things. Like, the world will come and find you.
Yeah, theirs is the only one that doesn't fall apart by its own virtue. It's an outside force that eventually comes barreling in that they're just not prepared for, because they just don't want to commit themselves to that kind of mentality. And so in the end, you know, when Pascal sort of realizes that, like, okay, I don't like this, but to save these children, or to try to save these children, I'm going to do violence here. It didn't necessarily feel like a betrayal of anything. It felt like finally coming to terms with the fact that, like, as much as we want this sort of, you know, kind of utopic vision of, you know, like what a polite and friendly society can be, there's always going to be some kind of external threat out there in the world that maybe doesn't necessarily have, like, you know, any real malice. It's just out to get you because a fucking logic virus, you know, like anything could just come at you at any moment. Knows. You have to be prepared for it. And, you know, in the end, his mistake ultimately was in trying to imbibe imbue the children with something like fear, which ultimately turned against them. But in his ideals for society weren't necessarily undone by that. It's just that it was a coming to terms with something.
Right, a version of the world in which they had never run into the weird logic virus, they probably would have continued to prosper.
Yeah.
But that is not Nier. Nier is a game in which you can so clearly see a positive path forward. Like, literally, one of the things I like about endings A and B is, oh, here is what the happy ending for these two characters might look like. If you're so desperate for it, you go ahead and stop playing right now. Oh, look, you know, 2B and 9S live and happily ever after. Here's a flower. But that's not the world you get. You end up having to dig back in. And for me, that transition from playthrough B to playthrough C, or playthrough 2 to playthrough 3, where it shifts from what you expect to be at the beginning of the game again to, oh no, actually we're moving forward, and now 2B is dressed up like a weird fascist stormtrooper, and like Yorha is showing its true colors with like all black everything, is really good, and like instantly says like, oh no. You thought it was complicated when we revealed that all the humans were dead and all the aliens are dead? No. It's complicated now, because now we're going to keep moving forward with this stuff, and inevitably there will be cost. And there is. And I'm curious, like, you know, we talked a lot about Pascal. Did the 2B, 9S, A2 drama touch you guys at all?
The A2 stuff less, I think, because I got so wrapped up in the like Pascal stuff that like
yeah.
that sort of cratered me emotionally, and I think the last couple hours of the game get like, if I break it down, like, and taking away the ending E and like the, you know, sort of like the purity
yeah,
of that,
we'll
but like
to.
Yeah, but like the very like, you know, it goes full anime, you know, in those like hours when you're getting like the AI and stuff like that in a way that, you know, if I sat down and broke it down to myself, like, what's happening, I found it interesting, mm-hmm. but there was sort of so much going on that I enjoyed it when it was a little, not simpler, but, like, you know, that I think the final reveal, like, hit me with as much impact was, like, the discovery that the Yorha units were, you know, like, that the humans didn't exist, there was no human civilization, they were all be playing for fools, they were, like, fake. All those, and then you think back to all those fake radio blasts you were getting like throughout your playthrough that were, you know, these, you know, jingoistic like fight the robots, you know, or fight the aliens, I guess, like save the Earth. And, like, to know that none of that exists, like to know that like the Yorha were like meant to just be destroyed as part of this sort of like circular path that everything goes through. Like that was sort of like the last big bomb for me in terms of the way they were peeling away these different layers. It's incredibly tragic. But then there's that quote where I think they say like something along the lines of, you know, like, well, everyone needs a god to look for, mm-hmm. you know, and like that line imbues a lot of the sort of mythology of the game and a lot and motivates a lot of the character. You know, even if it's not religious, like, God can mean a lot of different things, and, you know, the concept of, like, a god means a lot of things to a lot of different people in the world of Nier, and, like, the idea that humans who are extinct became gods and then had to be mythologized as gods so that the robots had something to, or the androids, I guess, had something to fight for, is, like, something both understandable and then undeniably tragic.
Yeah, I mean, it's, for me, you know, gods in this case very, very much just ties specifically into purpose. The idea of, like, why are you here? What are you doing? What is driving you forward at any given moment? And for me, like, the first ending where you just, you know, you very gently choke the life out of 9S, and then he comes back as the other robot. It was just sort of a goofy thing, like oh, okay, yeah. By that point, I still didn't really understand what the Adam and Eve ship even really was. I didn't necessarily grasp, like, where any of that was going. I was just like, okay, well, this is just, like, big stupid action game stuff, so I'm just going to kind of go with it. The 9S stuff where you kind of start to understand that, like, oh yeah, the whole humanity thing was, you know, sort of a devised lie to sort of give purpose to this entire, you know, segment of this machine population. You know, that was a little more interesting to me, and it, like, I kind of felt it coming. Like, it seemed like that just the way that those, you know, robot messages were coming through from the moon, and the way everyone just sort of talked about humanity in this very sort of distant kind of term, felt to me like, okay, they're not gonna bring humans into this at any point, because that they would have done that by now if they were going to.
For me,
go ahead. No, you don't go for
it. Like one of the big twists there on the Yorha unit specifically, I don't remember if this was in one of the side files you could read or if it was a main, I think it's a main thing that 9S discovers is like, oh no, we're literally machines. Like literally the same stuff that's in machine cores is in Yorha units.
Yeah, like the same material twist. Yeah, it's the exact same material that they use to build the machine cores is what they use to fashion the Yorha units. And, you know, that's an interesting twist on it, especially so the one thing I was never completely clear on, and this might be something that I didn't get from not having played the original Nier, is that I know that the humans created androids because there was a whole thing involving, like, Project Gestalt and the...
Deep breath.
And the Devlin, what's the other one's name?
Popola. Devlin and Popola.
So yeah. I knew that they were tied into that stuff somehow, but I didn't really understand why there were still androids on Earth that had been repurposed for this fight years and years after humanity had gone, and then like an alien invasion showed up after humanity had already disappeared. Does that make sense? Like, I didn't quite guess.
And I'm too far away from my
if you asked me a month ago, like, I probably could have given you, like, a 50% answer, and now I'm at, like, 15. But, like, you know, like, in the original Nier, you know, humanity is hit by a virus because of ending E to Drakengard 3, and then, like, and their inability to preserve human bodies, they find a way to extract the souls from... Which those become Gestalt, right?
Right. That's Project Gestalt is trying to upload human consciousnesses into a sort of AI thing.
Right. And then, like, part of Nier is that they don't know that, right? Like, the Gestalts become conscious on their own. Like, the Gestalts pre being downloaded with AI become their own set of consciousness, but then you're able to find. Like, the soul, and so, like, they both, like, because isn't part of Nier, like, there's a character who's both, right? Like, or something?
Like, there's some good videos on the internet.
Nier?
Yes.
Yes. Nier is that character?
So Nier is both of those things, right? Because there is Nier Replicant and also Nier Gestalt.
Right, and Replicant and Gestalt, and, like, part of Nier is, there are characters who discover their, like, other halves, and then it's, like, what is the one that is not actually naturally... The thing that it think it is, like, what does that mean it is? And should it sacrifice itself for that AI dump? So, like, all that happens, and then I guess at some point there's an AI, and part of Project Gestalt is also hiding the fact that humanity died humanity perished, like, in the Drakengard 3 era. Like, humanity is gone at the beginning of Nier, and then, like, the lie is perpetuated through Nier and Nier Automata, but the idea is that you're built to save humanity and to research ways to save humanity. If you take that away, that's their base programming, and so then, like, without that, what would they do? And so
they have no reason to exist, and so this is sort of a way of, you know, creating some kind of purpose for a machine race that is already there and just has nothing to do.
Right, and then the Yorha operation is specifically to then go do that thing that is creating a reason for the androids to continue living, right? Like, Project Yorha is meant to create that notion that we have a reason to live, which is to protect the humans on the moon, etc. And what Adam and Eve end up wanting to do is to destroy that, and then also leave on a spaceship. That's also a thing that they want to do, is go to the stars. Which is, again, like, kind of an interesting thing of just, like, fuck Earth, fuck all of the... We can't ever recreate ourselves in our own image. We can never find a version of life we'll be happy with so long as all we have around us for reference is... human stuff. Let's get out of here and go rebuild from scratch. And 9S, if you want to come with us, buddy, you jump on board.
Well, and then there's also, you know, like, there are instances in the game where they explore the idea of, like, if you become aware of your purpose and that your purpose is no longer compatible with what's around you, like, there's the Wise Robot side quest where, you know, you essentially talk to a series of robots that have become conscious, aware, and upset over the fact that they were built for war. They no longer want to participate in war. They don't see the purpose, and yet that's what they're built for. And so it essentially drives them mad, and concluding with that, you know, the one that you talk to on the tower, that when it confesses, you know, sort of the context that you've had for the previous wise robots you've encountered, you know, it commits suicide because, and it disconnects from the network, so it's an actual suicide for the robot, as opposed to just being, you know, sort of like reborn in a different body. And like that leads you to a pretty dark interpretation of like what it could be like if you lose that sense of purpose, because those robots couldn't just handle it.
If you lose that sense of purpose and you don't have a community around you to sort of try and pick you up and give you that direction, because, you know, obviously there are these different enclaves within the world that have sort of found their own little communities to varying degrees of success, very few of them actually successful. But, you know, they at the very least, like, they, like, you know, the people who are defending the Forest King, they don't really care that their Forest King is dead, even after you know, A2 shows up and finally offs it. Like, they're still there defending their kingdom because that they've decided that that is their thing. But, you know, if you're just a random robot wandering around or you haven't found your way into any of that, you know, that side quest line is probably one of my favorites, because it does sort of just, you know, position these sort of, like, individual bots that have not really found any sort of direction that makes sense to them, or, you know, any group that would accept them, and, like you said, is eventually just kind of driven mad by the fact that they have nowhere to go and nothing to do.
Well, and so that is the core conflict of the 2B9S A2, like, triangle also, right? Which is, the entire game is 2B needs 9S to do her mission, but also her mission at the end of the day is to kill 9S if he gets curious enough. When he eventually, like, inevitably figures out what happened, she is not in fact 2B, she's in fact 2E, type, you know, type 2 executioner or whatever.
Now,
did
either of you do the side quest where you meet the other E unit?
Totally. And like that mission totally changes once you realize in your mind, like, oh, 2B knew the whole time what she was fucking going after, and like all of 9S, you know, all of the dialogue that they have about, like, what a monster she is, like, 2B's weird, awkward silences around that aren't just like, oh, I have complicated thoughts about that. It's, oh, I'm one of these two.
Yeah.
That is my purpose. My purpose is to eventually kill 9S.
And I think that's why there's, like, a line at the end of the first ending that's something along the lines where, like, she's like, I'm sorry, or, like, we've done this before. Like, there's an allusion to, like,
yes,
this has happened.
Totally.
Dozens, hundreds of times before, yeah.
Well, and so that's the thing. So the thing that ended up sticking with me with them, like, their relationship and the tragedy around them didn't really hit me until days later after thinking about it more and more and more. There was a bit at which a friend of mine, Robert, was like, hey, Austin, who called him 9S, or who called him 9S? And I was like, no one. Like, duh, no one called him 9S. He's like a dweeb who, like, wants to be called 9S. And then it hit me later, like, oh, no, you, like, 2B calls him 9S in weird past lives he half remembers.
Yeah.
When he thinks because he doesn't have partners. He says that early on. He's like, I don't normally work with anybody. But then he also says, people always call me 9S. And like, yeah, she does. She does call him 9S right before she kills him every time, which is great.
Yeah.
And then the second thing there with them, for me, that ended up sticking with me was that there's that great moment of where one of the bosses, I want to say it was Adam. Maybe it wasn't. I don't remember who it was. It's like, oh, you want to bleep her. And it's a four-letter word that's bleeped out. And the first time through, you're like, oh, he said fuck. Like, oh, he's talking about how 9S clearly has this huge crush on 2B. But then in the final, one of the final endings in C or D, you get that conversation between A2 and 9S where she's like, of course, you already know this, but she's 2E and you understand what all this is. And you always have. And so suddenly it repaints their relationship as like, oh, they're both playing along. They both know what's up. And they like this brief moment that they can have together, both 2B and 9S, where they don't have to confront the fact that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Their natural purposes are terrible.
Yeah.
Or their assigned purposes are terrible. And so that note of like, oh, you just want to bleep her, could also be kill her or hurt her or any other four-letter word. And I love it when a game kind of recontextualizes its own like dialogue or its own scenes. And this game does that all the time.
Yeah,
so,
it does a good job. It does a really good job with it too, because it doesn't feel like that sort of like, okay, we're actually just retconning things that you sort
right.
of, you know, maybe thought one were happening in one section but not another. Like that those early scenes like in the first playthrough where, you know, you're doing the raid on the factory. And, you know, 2B clearly doesn't want to talk to 9S, really, unless she absolutely has to and is being sort of, you know, shitty about it. Like, they don't play that up later as, like, you know, oh, well, actually, she was being, you know, terrible to him for this reason. Like, it doesn't feel... Like, you go back, and I actually started over the game and just started playing through that scene, and I was like, if you know that going in, the way that she is brusque with him... is very specific. Like, you, it doesn't just feel like, oh, I don't get along with people, so whatever. Yeah. It's this very specific, like, I don't want to talk to you.
Right.
And it comes across, like, seeing it again, it was just like, oh, God. It, like, they actually play it really well.
This is why she doesn't want to get emotional.
Yeah.
It's not because it's some rule or whatever. It's because she knows what it's like to redevelop this emotional attachment over and over and over again and have to fucking kill this dude.
And the way she reacts when, you know, they have to touch the black boxes to kill the, you know, the when they're surrounded by the Engels bots. And she starts, you know, gasping about how, you know, the version that gets uploaded back to the bunker won't be the you that's right now. And the reason that she's pissed is because she's not killing him because he's learned anything. She's killing him because they're in a fucked up situation. They have no choice. Yeah. And she has to hit the reset button before she wants to.
Yeah, totally. Fucked up situation.
Yep.
We've been going for a little while. What do you guys think about taking some questions?
Sure.
Digging into the old question bucket. So this comes in from Jackson, who says, Yoko Taro has stated that he doesn't want to lay out the quote-unquote moral of the story for players. He would rather people make their own meaning. What do you think are your personal take-home messages from the game?
Hmm. Well, it's interesting because I've read that, you know, having not played his previous games, except sort of like seeing YouTube videos and sort of like general sort of like synopsis, is like he's generally down, like not hopeful, like things are bad, they're always going to be bad, humanity sucks, like stop having any faith in it, like this is all bullshit, we're just wasting our time. And I remember reading in an interview with him where he talked about how, you know, like, you know, there's an ending to this game, sort of like the ending that, you know, portends not necessarily hope but like an attempt that maybe there's a version that is hopeful or could be better if you try again. And so, like, I think largely the game is not necessarily cynical as much as it's just, like, it doesn't feel cynical, or it feels cynical in a way that feels earned, right? Like, as opposed to being cynical for just the sake of being negative and, like, humanity sucks. Like, it feels like it's an earned critique of humanity and, like, different social and societal constructs. But, like, the very end gives you this hopeful idea that, like, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try. Like, maybe it's all, maybe
at the
it
end
is
of
all,
the day.
Yeah, maybe it is all for nothing. Maybe it all sucks and it's always going to suck and there's nothing you can do about that. But that, like, if your purpose shouldn't be to not give it a shot.
Yeah.
What's the alternative, bud? Like, you just want to just lay there forever? Like, I guess that makes the, you know what? If you want to lay there forever, cool. Like, awesome. I'm not going to judge you. That's what this game says. But then it does say, like, but hey, if you did give it a shot, there is a chance that this time it might turn out a little different. Who knows?
Yeah. There's a line in a book, philosophical pessimism text, Conspiracy Against the Human Race, where the writer talks a little bit about how, like, if you're so pessimistic about human society and the way the world works and the way things are, why don't you just kill yourself? Why don't you just stop living? Because obviously that's a much more preferable option to you. And he kind of talks about, like, well, look, just because we've been brought into this world and we don't care for it and we don't like the way that, you know, existence sort of feels and just sort of is, like, doesn't mean that, you know, a better alternative is just to be dead. That the idea is that you should just quit and give up. You know, you may not want to perpetuate it. You may not want to, you know, continue to participate in a way that sort of, like, you know, or have children and sort of be, you know, kind of part of this larger society. But you're here, and, you know, being suicidal is not necessarily a better option than just sort of, you know, living through existence and just sort of doing what you can to make it less miserable for the other people who are here to share this with you.
Right.
And, you know, totally. That's kind of the way I looked at it when I was playing. It's not so much that, you know, Yoko Taro thinks the world sucks and isn't worth living. It's that there are so many things about humanity that are just a nightmare. And, you know, especially when sort of taken in by these, you know, these new kinds of existences that don't really understand a lot of the concepts that were sort of ingrained in humanity, and they're just trying to apply them and not doing a very good job, they... You know, it's a critique. It's not necessarily, you know, just a, like you said, it's not just a cynical sort of, you know, just dumping on everything. Like, it's trying to find the moments of humanity that make sense and that work and that feel like they're worth having, even amid all the various ways that everything can and will go wrong.
Totally.
Does that make sense? I'm sort of rambling there toward the end, but...
A little bit, but I think that given the game and the topic, that might be okay.
Yeah, you know, the game is a little rambly.
Yeah, totally. And for whatever reason, I think that that is normally pretty charming. It tends to know exactly how long you're allowed to ramble before turning into, like, a new weird shooter sequence or whatever the next big spectacle moment is, you know? This one comes in from a person whose name I've already lost. They ask, I've already lost their name, fuck, if we did any of the weapon stores and whether or not we thought anything about those. That, you know, in the previous Yoko Taro games, there was this thing where you could level up weapons and then get little stories, and they're just curious if we did that with any of these and if any of them stuck out for us.
I didn't.
Like,
The side quests were grindy enough that the concept of, like, going to find parts to upgrade these weapons was just too... That was a bridge too far for what this game was asking me. So, like, I saw some of them, and, like, yeah. So there were the couple that I did saw intrigued me, and then if I could have paid $9.99 for a near weapon season pass, I would have just done that and just read them all, like, because I was so overpowered, I had so much stuff by the end, but I didn't have these very specific pieces, and I didn't want to, like, go to GameFAQs and figure it out.
Yeah,
but I'm meaning to go and just read them, because the couple I saw were really interesting.
You should. They're all really. They're not all the best or whatever. Like, some of them are pretty goofy, or they go the other way, which is, like, they start out really goofy and they turn really serious, like the whole game does. But there are a couple that stuck with me. I, of course, went to Pascal's village after wiping his memory and bought the weapons from him, and the weapons were made from the heads of the machine children.
I'm actually kind of glad I didn't go back after that.
Yeah, you were right too. The story on those was just four lines, and each level that you increased it, you got one more line, and it was, "I lack parts. I am useless. My existence is unnecessary. I tried so hard, mommy." And, like, man,
God damn
Yoko Taro, why you gotta do me like this, man?
Yeah, for my part, I did end up collecting a fair number of the weapons, not all, and I did upgrade them kind of as much as I could. Like, I found that one weaponsmith in the Forest Kingdom that will let you upgrade to level 4 for a lot of that stuff. I don't know if there was another one besides him that let you go even higher than that, but...
I think that's the cap. I think most of them have 4 levels of story and 4 levels of, like special attacks and stuff like that.
So I read through some of them. I wasn't paying super close attention. Like, one of the things I maybe regret about playing through it was that I was kind of fixated on just trying to get through the story, because, one, I wanted to be able to do this. But two, I just sort of was more engaged with the on-screen action than I think I was with a lot of the tech stuff. So I didn't dig super deep into the weapon stories or, like, some of the items that you find that have, like, you know, the little story bits attached to them. I read them, but I mostly skimmed.
Let's see, one more here from This one's solid in its own right. From Davin, who says, "How'd you cope with the machines being really cute and sweet and sad? I found it hard to beat them up, especially after the bucket scene or finding out that waving flags is fun." I don't know what that last part is, and I'm nervous. Does a robot learn that waving flags is fun?
No, it's when you first make it to the robot village, and they're...
Right! No! I forgot about that.
In the robot village is where I had my first encounter with accidentally hitting R1, like, around a bunch of, like, friendly robots, and... Like
your first incident? Wait.
Well, but no, like ones like these
like robots that weren't antagonists.
I know.
Yeah, they weren't antagonists.
I'm going the other way. There wasn't a second incident, right? You didn't continue to hurt innocent robots.
I don't believe so. Not that I'm aware of. I had a moment in the amusement park where they were all passive, and so I just started beating the shit out of them.
So I did the same thing.
Until, like, I accidentally had a dialogue with one of them and went, oh, no. And then, like, you know, they all reset and or rejoined the network and just got dumped in. I'm like, I'm not sure narratively how it worked out, but then realized I had killed, like, a father and daughter combination. Like, I'm apologizing.
You didn't mean
to. So I killed every bot in front of the amusement park. And then when I started to go in and I ran into, like, the family of robots, I was like, oh, something's not right here. I should stop doing this. I should stop murdering these robots.
Yep.
Oh, but also there's this tank, so I should definitely fight this tank. And then I went back the second time, and it was like, oh, I don't have to fight the tank.
You
oh, fuck,
fight
the
tank.
Tank won't attack if I don't attack
it. Doesn't
shit.
Attack.
They were
it
so
just
happy.
Shoots out confetti. They were just a happy tank, Alex. This comes in from Mitchell, who says, this is wonderful timing, as I just saw the ending of Nier not an hour ago. I was wondering what side quests hit you all the hardest. For me, a series of side quests involving a shut-in robot in the village was cute and funny as I was completing them, but as the village burned hours later, I felt an unbearable sadness knowing that the robot child was still in the hut, burning alive because of his social anxiety. Thanks for reading.
Oh, God.
Spoilers.
Is that confirmed, or is that...
Well,
is that
here's
just
the thing
us?
That happened. I went back there with, as A2, which I mentioned, and... went up to that hut and was like, oh, it's locked, shit. And I, like, swung my swords, and it hit something inside and broke it, and I got, like, drops from it. Something like machine gear parts.
Well,
and
then you're the true monster.
It's me, the true monster. I should have gone back as 9S, who could have opened the door. And then maybe at least there would have been... I don't know if he would have still been in there, safe and sound. And if so, could have he come out and hung out with Pascal, and maybe they could have been buds? Like,
All I know is that when I was running around trying to kill the zombie robots during that attack, I did kind of glance upward to see which parts of the village were on fire, just in case our friend with the special locks and shut-in tendencies might have maybe found a way out. That door was still sealed up, and it was extremely on fire.
No.
It was extremely on fire.
I think the side quest for me was the one I already talked about, was the wise robots. That's the one that, you know, it was just the way the robot just, like, casually just jumps and just kills itself. Like, it was just, like, it was unexpected. Like, there were, like, every single side quest is, like, interesting and sad. You know, like, there's the couple that you can help.
The couple is the next one that definitely came
so
to mind.
So I didn't
me.
Finish that one because.
Oh, wow.
So here's.
Oh, no.
Tell me what happens, because here's what happened to me was that I didn't finish it on the 2B playthrough, and I was like, well, I can redo these ones that I didn't finish in the 9S section. But something happened where I got through the first step of it again, but when I went to the flooded city where you're supposed to meet up with them the second time, they never showed up. So I don't know if that was just
weird.
A glitch.
Yeah, there's some triggering issues definitely in this game. It's like the things didn't line up right and the trigger didn't go off, and now they're not in the right place for sure. So
what happens if
you
give them the money?
Oh,
so you give
no.
them the money.
Yeah, take
and,
it away, Austin.
And, and
I'll just sit here and lay on the floor.
Oh, no.
God. So you give them the money, because remember, they need the money to give it to basically a coyote, right? Like, who's going to, like, see them across the ocean to a different place.
And it's a lot of money in your first playthrough. Like,
it's
I didn't
a
have
lot
enough
of money.
To, I didn't have enough to give it to him the first time. Then the second playthrough, you just have way too much money because you get to sell those machine cores. So I couldn't give him the money the first time around, and then had to do it in the second playthrough.
And so you give them the money, and then you find just one of them. Do you remember which one it is? Do you remember if it's the dude or the lady?
There are there are moments where, like, you isolate both of them, I believe, before.
Well, like, so yeah, what ends up happening is they end up like, oh no, they didn't get across. The guy screwed them over and took their money, of course, right? And then you end up getting them both back, and you reunite them, and then she says, so now I'm blanking out on what her request was.
I do remember. Parts for her, right?
You have to get some parts for her to, like, repair him or whatever.
And then you meet him in the desert.
Right. And then you end up meeting them both at the front of the amusement park, I think. And she's like, okay, we're going to both erase our memories and just go back to the way it was. We can't go on remembering that we tried to escape and we couldn't.
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, on three, you and me, buddy, we're gonna reset our memories. It's like 3, 2, 1. And then she doesn't reset her memory, but he does. So she remembers everything on purpose. His mind goes blank. And she's basically just like, he wasn't like a tough enough dude to do this.
And also implies that she's done it a bunch of times.
Oh,
a bunch
of times. Yes.
Wow.
Wow. It's like, oh, yeah. We'll just, and you, like, you know, the, there's like a line of dialogue that is like meant to imply, like, shouldn't you feel bad about this? And she's, no. Like, this is like, you know, I've done this 34, you know, maybe hundreds of times. Like, I'm just waiting till I can finally train this dude to be the thing that I wanted the first time around.
So she's essentially trying to rewrite his personality and to her own designs.
Yeah. Yes, like, exactly like that. And I think she's done it 5 times before. This is the 6th time. And then afterwards, Pascal's like, oh, I guess women can be scary. Okay, Pascal. Okay,
that's a lesson, bud. Sure.
That's a lesson. If you want to take that away from it, sure. So that one stuck with me for sure. I think one of the things that we didn't talk about here, and this is a question that gets into this, is what did you think about Pods 042 and 153 gaining self-determination and 042's own wants being tied to the player's agency in refusing the outcome given to them and fighting for their happy ending? I think that's a good jumping-off question to then talk about what that ending is.
Before we do that, I did want to mention one side quest that,
yes, please.
That I like. I'm sorry. I don't mean to take it back. But
No, definitely.
There were a bunch of ones that I really liked. I liked the E... robot one where you kind of figure out what's happening there. I like the one with the woman in the resistance camp who wants you to find her. I forget if it's like multiple comrades or just a few. And then, you know, she sort of like basically goes on a revenge bender to try and avenge them. Yeah. That was like, I think a lot of that stuff was pretty good in sort of the way it plays into that stuff. But my favorite one was this very small one, where you go back and you repair the Engels unit that blows up in the middle of the city.
Yes.
And you give...
Right, so you have to tell me about that one, because I tried to get that to trigger, and it just, that bugged out for me.
Okay.
I, like, faced where the machine was.
It didn't bug out. I had to look up a YouTube video. There's a specific, like, rock structure that you have to step on.
Yeah, it's a positioning thing.
It's, like, a positioning thing where, like, that's the only way for, like, the X prompt to show up.
Oh,
it's too bad, because the dot... You should go and just watch, like, a YouTube... And Alex explain it.
Yeah, Alex,
like,
give me the breakdown.
The basic gist... is you repair this robot and it sort of comes back online and starts talking to you. And initially you're sort of like, okay, is this thing just sort of like going through pre-programmed sort of, you know, thoughts? But then it starts like actually talking to you. And you are amazed because you don't think that these robots have the capacity for consciousness, but they, like every other machine there, it does. So you go back a couple of times to visit with it. Because it can't go anywhere. Like, it's just a head attached to a useless body at this point, and it just won't go, it can't do anything. So, like, it just wants you to come visit because it's bored. And so you start to kind of talk through it and kind of go through some conversational stuff where it's just asking you questions, and then, you know, you kind of go through the motions with it. And then at the end, the last time you go and visit it, it's just like, yeah, so I really appreciate you guys coming to spend time with me. That was cool. But... I'm really bored, so I'm gonna shut down. And then it just shuts down. And it asks you to repurpose the parts you used to repair it. It's like, here, you should just take that shit out of me, because I don't want to do this anymore. And then it's just like, peace. And it just shuts itself down.
Cool.
It is super depressing, but at the same time, the way it's played is actually kind of like, it's not as overly depressing as maybe some of the other stuff. Like, it's a silly little bit that maybe has kind of a sad ending to it, but I liked the way they played it. It's not too dour. It's just like, you know what? I kind of see where this machine is coming from.
Totally. Like, it is just a war machine. It doesn't have a developed conscience. It doesn't have mobility anymore, and it seems like it's making a choice of its own volition. So, sure. Okay. You know, I'm glad you checked donor on your card,
yeah.
Engels. Like, I'll try to use these parts for good. I'll upgrade this sword, I guess.
Anyway, so yes, if you want to go back to the previous question, I just wanted to get that
out. Let's talk about ending E and also about, because so to set up ending E, and again, remind me if I'm getting this wrong because it's been a while. You know, you've done ending D or E at this, or sorry, C or D at this point. You've confronted the big AI. You've had the big fight between A2 and 9S.
And you made your choice as to which one you want to decide with.
Exactly. And for me, I'd done both of them already.
Yes.
And I was doing the second one. And then you get this prompt that says, you know, you're supposed to... I'm trying to remember the exact like way it sets itself up, but one of the pods basically says like, no, this is not it. Like, I refuse to let this be the way things go out. And then kind of says like, do you agree, player? Like, doesn't actually say the word player, but asks you to agree to it because it means that you will have to take a big risk. And Patrick, you wrote about this, so I'll hand that part off to you.
Yeah, I mean, you if you say yes, then you sort of like participate in this credit sequence where you know, it's essentially a bullet hell game, and you're used to that because a lot of the hacking sequences are
right.
Essentially bullet hells, and the way the game, you know, cleverly will change the camera angle, like, is definitely invoking sort of bullet hell games. But like, you do it for a couple of minutes, and then it becomes clear like you can't win. Like, I sincerely doubt, although I never want to doubt the ability for people who play video games hardcore to like dispute me on this notion, and maybe there's an ending F where you don't die in that ending in a way, but like if you're like most people, you end up dying a lot, and then the game prompts you if you want help, and you can ask for help, and then you are surrounded by a series of five ships that allow you to essentially cruise your way to the end of these credits, and like, you're actually blowing up the people that have made this game as you're doing it, and then but like, as you accept that help, the music switches from sort of like a solo voice to a chorus, and like, it's like actually like oddly like emotional, like the way it, even though you're shooting the credits of these Japanese game developers, like, but the way the music is tied with like all of it, and you have these messages in the background that are like in both cryptic and also like oddly encouraging that like you can do it and like get to the end, and then, you know, you finish it, and you know, that's where the game gets really wild with what it, I guess, optionally asks you to do, in which you're given the option if you want to, it's revealed that the reason you got that help and the reason you saw names in the background is because those were other people who had written those messages, and you got that help because someone else sacrificed their save data, which then turns into those five ships. And so you essentially sacrifice your save data so that you can help someone else if they need it, so they can get to the end of that sequence. And it's, I mean, I didn't think about it too long. I don't know about the rest of you, but I've never... I mean, I know that Yoko Taro has done this before. I know that Nier has a similar trick, totally. But I've never encountered that in a game. And even though I'm someone, probably like both of you, that generally plays a game once and you're done by the nature of our jobs, like, it still felt weird to be like, I am 45 hours into this game.
Yeah.
And okay, game, just fucking take it. Just delete it. Just delete
all
it. Because basically, when I move on to the next game, you might as well delete it. There's really no difference. Like tangibly, there is literally not a whole
your
lot of difference.
Angles
here.
Giving your parts to someone else.
And they make you watch it. They make you – they dismantle your save. Like, you go through the menus.
I love that because there's already good menu stuff in this game. Mm-hmm. When you first start up after the intro sequence and you boot up as 2B in the first playthrough, and you have to, like, set your brightness and all that stuff. And then as 9S, you get to see to your 2B playthrough, like, setting all of your options. I love how they use the menus in this game already. And so then, yeah, that ending is, like, or that moment is really great. And I understand why it needs to be an option. It needs to be a thing. You need to be able to ask the player, do you commit to doing this? I'm glad that there's an option, but also there's no option.
No.
If you said no to that, I don't want to know you.
You're an inhuman monster. You learn nothing from this game. You know nothing of sacrifice, of honor.
And don't come at me with the, I still had side quests to do. Dog, start a new game. If you're that dedicated, start a new game.
Hey,
but
I had tons of side quests I didn't
me
do.
Too.
I had tons of endings I never saw. I never got to the secret boss. I never did any of that shit.
You know who has side quests to do? Me in real life. And you got to prioritize. Sometimes you don't get to do everything. You don't get to.
In some ways, it was freeing because I could say, now I don't have an excuse for why I don't see the rest of the stuff in this game because my save data's gone.
Mm-hmm. But in some weird way, it also made me more likely to eventually go back to it one day, theoretically, because I don't want to go back to the save file from when before I was about to go fucking kill either A2 or 9S. I want to go back to the beginning. I want to go back into... I said this before, but
back
one
when
of
Pascal
the,
was so innocent.
Was the thing that's so good about this game is early on in the game there are so many spaces that feel like ratty and bad and dangerous and like just like even the places that were safe, like the amusement park, feel creepy. But by the end of the game, you miss what those old spaces felt like. Like by the time you go to the amusement park, once the zombification stuff happens. And instead of being, like, happy clown robots dancing around, it's just, like, an occasional zombie robot, like, barely being able to even reach for you to try to attack you because it's so weak. Like, oh, just bring back the good music and let these weird, creepy clown robots dance again. I love how it transforms and stuff. And so when I do go back to this game eventually, that's the version of the game that I really want to go back to and, like, see those places for the first time or see those places again for the first time as A2, as 2B.
Well, so, not to cycle too far back to the whole, what does this game mean question or whatever, but, like, if there was a prevailing theme in there, it's this notion that as painful as it might be and maybe as misguided as it can be, there's value in starting over. There's value in starting fresh where you can, when you can, and sometimes, obviously, that's not the best, as apparently was the case with that weird couple where that woman was just erasing that guy's memory over and over again. But, in the case of, like, Pascal, as much as you want to say, like, no, Pascal should, maybe just go on and live with what has happened and learn from it and exist, there's also some value in the idea of, well, also not being burdened by that guilt for God only knows how many years that creature, that person may exist. There's some value in maybe that person being able, or that robot being able to start over and sort of, kind of reapproach things without that burden. And in this case, obviously having your save file is not necessarily a burden down the road, but I think there is value in, if you're going to come back to this thing, start fresh. And in doing so, give a piece of yourself to someone else so that they may benefit.
Totally. I think that for me, that's a good enough place to leave it off. Unless anybody else has anything else they want to add about this. I feel like the problem is I could have this conversation for 4 hours.
Right.
I want to stop myself now because it's 9:30 p.m. and because I don't want to have this conversation for 4 hours on a work night.
I do just want to very quickly say that I don't think there is any way you can just survive that credit sequence without getting
either.
Some help.
I don't think
there's
so.
There's a point, when you get to the Square Enix, like, publisher section, it is fucking impossible at that point. Like, they take forever to kill, they shoot a million bullets, there's just not much you can do once you get
that
far.
What if you could, though? What if there's a secret 27th ending to Nier Automata?
Yeah, you have to beat Emil, and you have to beat him 99 times, and when you do, finally, the Square Enix section becomes tolerable.
Somebody did email to say, why is Emil in this game after the ending of the last Nier? It's not the same Emil. It's a different Emil model. You can look that stuff up online. If you have any, like, plot questions, the internet has answers for you.
The Emil stuff is interesting. Like, Alex, if you just watch, like, I'll send you a link to it's like a 15 minute.
I watched the ending and the whole fight with him.
Well, it's just because there are, like, explicit references to, like, he talks about Nier, like, the character. Like, there are, like, really interesting things that are, like, even as someone that is not deep into Nier lore, like it's also, one thing that, so the last note I'll leave it on is, like, there is something profoundly interesting about the scale, like, most games that are sequels, right, or most games that have a fiction take place in such a small amount of time, and, like, what Nier does, what, if you take Drakengard 3 as, like, Nier 0, and then you have Nier, and then you have Nier Automata.
And then Drakengard 1. Drakengard 1 is actually the link between...
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, if they're all, like, technically part of, like, a longer fiction, depending on, like, how you interpret, different universes and stuff like that. But they're all connected. But there's a time scale that he works on and that this universe works on that is profoundly fascinating. Like, that's part of what makes, like, Automata work as well as it does, because it's, like, that stuff happened thousands of years ago. It wasn't like Gears of War 3 to 4 where it's like, and 10 years later, like, shit's happening again. Like, which is fine, but they're, the scale that it works at, which like forces it to like, in order to make that narrative work, it both A, allows you to ditch a lot of things, and then B, forces you to really think about the consequences of a lot of those things in a way that I can't think of another series that works on this time scale. And that part has me now, like, you know, I would love for him to keep working in this world, even if it's not near, right? Like, if it's like something
especially
else.
If it's not near. Make a new, like, you have Dragon Guard, you have
Near.
Take
me to that alien planet. What's up there?
Right, why not? Right, and at the end of that, let Adam and Eve's weird spaceship land on it, and like, they're not in it, but other bullshit is in there. You know what I mean? New biological organisms that they grew. It's people that they grew that are humans. That, you know, or whatever, right? That's what I want. I mean, to your credit, too, or to your point, rather, Patrick, not to your credit. You
I'll
didn't
take
do
that,
this.
Too.
Devla and Popola, their story is also really cool in this game.
Yes,
that is that references them as traitors or other Devla and Popola units as traitors in the original Nier. And here, like, they're paying for it. They're built now. They've been reprogrammed to have a sense of guilt for what other robots, like other androids who were their same design, their same models, did, even though they didn't do it. And that sort of stuff is really cool. Or even, like, the Black Skrull, which is a thing in the first Nier, sort of shows up here. But it doesn't – it's not important that you know it might be the Black Skrull. It might not even be the Black Skrull. It might just be – it happens to be a weird thing that is on Eve's body that reminds you of the Black Skrull. But that sort of, like, working inside of a big – you know, a huge canon. It's one of the benefits of having this big canon of different references and show or games and, again, stage plays and books and stuff like that, is there is a density in which if you're smart about it, you can be evocative without necessarily being, like, requiring deep reference for understanding. And I think that this game does that pretty well.
And it's pretty remarkable at its ability to reward. Because I think there's a lot of games that have dense mythologies get wrong, like, especially in our culture these days, where it's like, oh, there's, you know, there's comic books. Like, they're like this idea of, like, telling, you know, transmedia sort of, like, storytelling. Like Nier has that to a certain degree, but it also has such a dense, complicated mythology. Like, there's a version of writing this that only rewards those people. And I think also what this game does exceptionally well is that it rewards those people. People without alienating the people that did none of the work, or even I think, like, the three of us, like, just enough of the work to get, like, a context and a framework. But I think, like, across the whole spectrum, it is more rewarding the more you know, but you don't feel alienated for not having the time to have invest in that other stuff. And that's like
to go play another 50-hour game and then also Dragon Guard 3 and then also Dragon Guard 1. Don't worry about Dragon Guard 2. That's not in the timeline. That's a different – the connection from Dragon Guard 2 back is from an ending that doesn't exist in Dragon Guard 2. It only exists in a side novel. God,
high school me would have been psyched to have a summer to just go through the Yoko Taro chronology, but unfortunately,
I'm a little mad we don't have a video of the Yorha stage play, because there is, you find that thing in the computer that is the story of the third battle of Pearl Harbor, which they just drop, which is an incredible name, where they're just like, oh yeah, the third battle of Pearl Harbor, when the Yorha first met the androids, and it goes into the deep, like, story of when A2 first met Anemone for the first time, and that is the stage play. It's just rewritten as, like, fiction, which is like, okay, cool. I wish I had video of, like, Japanese actors doing that stuff on a stage, because that sounds wild.
That's got to be that video has to exist somewhere.
We'll dig around the internet. The dark web has it. The it's been uploaded to the black boxes on our moon base. So you just have to go up there.
Does Square Enix PR own us any favors? Maybe they can dig something up.
I think if you defeat Square Enix's CEO, in the new DLC.
He does. Square Enix and the Platinum deal. They essentially take the roles of Adam and Eve, and you fight them in an arena.
God, that's so good. Related DLC. I just read that Gravity Rush 2 is getting near Automata DLC. Cat can dress up like 2B, and that's good. That's good.
That's the kind of crossover I can get into.
Yeah, do more of that. Good year for Japanese games. I'm really thrilled. Really thrilled that we found time to play this game that I think in a less busy year, for whatever reason, somehow I think I would have skipped it. But here it was like almost like things are so busy that I wanted to, like, no, I'm putting my foot in the ground. I'm going to play this weird thing. I'm going to play this weird thing that's from a developer who I've heard good things about, and I know there are other big games I'm supposed to get to, but no, I'm going to get to this one that's a little out there. I owe it to games to do that, so... Oh, what an adventure. I have it out of my system now, finally.
We've done our part.
Yes.
We've found our cause.
Play
robot
game
god.
Of the year 2017.
Oh,
right
Jesus.
Now, come on. Get on
Poor.
Board.
I sat there and I tallied it up and I tried very hard to think of a way in which that is not currently my game of the year, but it doesn't, that isn't the thing. Like, I literally put Zelda down and I put Horizon down. I have not touched those games
Horizon
since I
came
got
out this year.
I got dedicated to beating Nier.
Alex, go with God to Goaty this year if you need moral support.
I may call you up at some point.
Yeah,
just put on just put on the phone, put us on speakerphone, and we'll just start yelling.
I don't even know that Nier is going to be my game of the year this year, but I'd be happy to craft a watertight argument with you, Alex, for that game to bring to those arguments.
We'll collude. We'll find some way to get the message out there.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
me. Where can people find your things on the internet if people don't already know?
I'm on that Twitter. Alex_Navarro. I also work for Giant Bomb. If you want to, GiantBomb.com is a website. I have video games and some other stuff.
If you are not a Giant Bomb premium subscriber, this
you
is serious.
Be.
You should be. One, you get to watch Fast and the Furious with the people from Giant Bomb, and that's been great. Two, you get to watch the Giant Bomb East team play through all of Yakuza 0.
Which has been a gas so far.
It is amazing, which is so good. It's been such a good year for games so far. Go do that. It's worth it just to see y'all's reaction to the thumbs up that one of the Yakuza 0 characters did in the last video. So go do that for sure. Thank you again, Alex, for coming through.
Thank you for
Patrick,
having me.
Patrick, thank you as always for being my guide into this world of sad robots and for being my co-host here on Waypoint Radio.
Of course.
I think it's going to do it for us today. I have no idea when this will go up. We'll figure that out at some point. But regardless, either the nearest Monday or nearest Friday, you'll be able to hear more of us.
Do you know what you just said?
Mm-hmm.
What? The nearest Monday or nearest Friday? What are the... fuck off. I'm going to go...
Wait. Did you just figure it out?
Yes, that wasn't intentional.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
I'm deep in the...
You're in the shit.
Turn off this podcast.
I'm going to end this right now. Catch you guys in the future where there are lots of sad
the
robots.
Nearest future.
I'm going to delete my memory of this.
Peace.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.